Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome to the play-in version of Warriors Plus Minus. We have all squandered our opportunity to be in the regular playoffs. So this is the, well, what seed are we going to be? That's the remaining question. Got my guys with me, Tim Kawakami, Ethan Strauss, Anthony Slater. Slater, man, you put the nail in the coffin on the six seed pretty, is it a little early?
No, it's not early. That 28-0 run was the end.
That was it. They don't even believe it, probably.
Yeah, I mean, look, 3.5 back, I believe, with 10 to go. The Mavericks have 11 to go and the tiebreaker, so you can really add an extra game to that. And Mavericks have plenty of simple games left. Like, the Mavericks at minimum are going to win, like, 6 more games. And I know that they have a soft schedule. The Warriors are not about to go 10-0.
I never thought they were going to get the 6th seed. If they had won last night, maybe I would have had a thought about it, but they're not that good. I mean, I don't want to shake up the world here, but the Warriors aren't that good. Mavericks aren't terrific themselves, and they have been playing great, but they're better than the Warriors. They didn't have Porzingis, and they destroyed the Warriors on a back-to-back. The Warriors have gotten through this, you know, the little funky lineup. It's great. Steph's, when he is incredible, which he's been for most of the season, the Warriors can compete with everybody, but when he's not incredible or when he's taken away, they're not that good. They're okay. They're a 500 team. That's what they are. For them to get the 6th seed, they would have had, what, be 6 games over 500, Slater, you think? At least 5 games over 500, and they're not getting there. That's just not who they are.
The Mavericks' remaining games, Detroit, they play. Sacramento, they play. They play the Cleveland Cavaliers twice. And remember, these are teams that want to lose at this point of the season. They're all jockeying for positioning. Toronto, Minnesota's their last game of the regular season. So like, the Mavericks, they put it out of reach yesterday. Now, the Mavericks are still battling because they have the Blazers to worry about. And the Warriors are going to have to hop 3 more teams besides the Mavericks, by the way, which we can get to. There are varying levels of likelihood of them hopping those teams. So at this point, to me, the goal is just get on the 7-8 side of the play-in. Like, just do that. That's the main thing they have to do.
Well, we got a lot to digest. Those type of games leave you with, you know, with some reflection. I feel like that 60-point loss wasn't that long ago. So what, if anything, are you taking away?
53-point loss. Give them some credit.
Yeah, well, they were down 60.
Smiley Geach had a late run in that game. He almost fought somebody at the end, and they went from 62 down, and they only lost by 53. It's not that bad.
Hardy rally.
We know TK's takeaway is, yeah, they're just not that good. Ethan, what did you walk away with?
That, and I also think this was worse than the Raptors loss, just because, A, because they had this goal in their midst, B, because it was on national television, which does matter, does echo across the league when you're embarrassed in front of everybody. C, because on an individual level, it killed any shot of Steph getting MVP, I think. So when you really just add it up, really bad loss.
Can I add a D? Steph Curry didn't play. Andre Green didn't play in the Toronto game. They played in this one.
Yeah, we could probably, if we think about it, add an E and an F and maybe get all the way down the alphabet.
Here's my E. Can't blame James Wiseman for this one. Can't blame development for this one.
That's good.
We're going down the alphabet, man. I got to play this podcast back so my son can understand it better.
Let me say one other thing that's going to infuriate Warriors fans. The Steph Curry MVP candidacy was based, and I just talked to Chris Mullin yesterday, who says he is the MVP, and granted, I understand what everyone's saying there, but it's based on him playing at a level that nobody could sustain. Nobody. This was like to get to the numbers that he would have to get to on a 500 team, and that's what this is. He would have just continued making 10 threes a game, scoring 40 a game. That's just not going to happen. If he had done it, yes, you're the MVP, Steph. Absolutely. But what I do think sometimes you get said, okay, he just did it for six straight games. That means he's going to do it for the next 14. No, the six, you got to celebrate the six that he did it in because it was so good. That's why it makes it good, because he can't do it for 20 in a row. Okay, I'll stop. Everyone's getting mad at me for that one.
Nah, I think that's realistic, and it probably also might have required Jokic slipping on a wet spot and getting himself hurt, and who knows. But I think the door is shut on that, just like the door is shut on the sixth seed. Yeah, they have some injuries. It matters for them because they're already depleted. That helped the bottom fall out, but that was just an embarrassing performance. And it's a reminder of why, even if Space Jam is a terrible movie, and I think it's awful, and Marcus and I have talked about it, it does deliver one of the best sports metaphors, which is sometimes it just looks like guys in the NBA have their powers sapped from them. It really looked like suddenly everybody on the Warriors just didn't know how to play basketball anymore. It was really shocking.
There was one kind of current between a lot of these blowouts, and as Slater wrote, they've seemed to suffer a lot of them. Like when they get down, they really get down. It's an Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre are not good in blowouts. Like, they don't turn it around. Those are not guys, although we've seen Oubre do it, you know, but those are not wings that you go, okay, wait a minute, Steph doesn't have it tonight. Draymond doesn't quite have it. Go get them, guys. That doesn't happen with those two.
It's this devil's combination of Wiggins not stepping up and Oubre stepping up too
much. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, no, exactly. You don't need to take that angle three off the dribbles. No. They need a good possession.
Well, it reminded me a little of the Wizards game. Remember, so like Steph comes out of the gate looking fatigued. And we can, you know, you kind of alluded to that. But they, as a team, look fatigued. But then in the middle of the first quarter, Oubre came in. And Oubre hadn't played in a few games. It was like an injection of energy. And he was really good in that Wizards game. And remember, they were down 18, I think, at the end of the first quarter. And him and Jordan Poole just dragged them back. And they've had a really good kind of like 1-2 combo offensive run off the bench. Last night, they're having offensive issues early. And, you know, they were up 12-11, and then suddenly it's 16-12. Suddenly it's 18-12. They bring Oubre, and eventually they bring Poole in. And you're like, you know, can this newfound like bench punch rescue them again? Can they inject him with life? And then it was like, oh no, they're playing just as poorly, looking just as fatigued. And this one, Oubre ended, I think, a minus 41 in his minutes. And Poole was not good either. No, you know, I don't know what his minus was, because I think he saved some of it late, but at one point he was like 1 of 7 with a few turnovers, and he had airballed a couple shots. Like, they airballed, I think, 3 or 4 shots. And then just the 28-0 run is just historic. It hadn't been done in the NBA since 2009. I asked Curry about it, and he was like, we didn't do that to anybody. And that tells you all you need to know. The Dynasty Warriors never did to the Warriors last night what the Mavericks did. And to be honest, Dallas didn't look that good. That was like the weakest 28-0 run I've seen.
And by the way, Dallas isn't that good. I mean, that's the other, if we're going to add an F on top of the E.
They lost to the Kings the night before.
Yeah, I don't think they're that good either. I'm sorry.
And no Porzingis. I mean, no, Porzingis has been up and down this season, but no Porzingis. That's, you know, that's a body they don't have.
So that's a G.
Not that I'll make one qualifier. Not that it was going to save this game, but they could have really used Cam Bazemore and Damian Lee in this game. They really, I mean, that's just a layer. It's not a great layer, but it's a layer that protects them sometimes against depending so much on people who don't have it. And maybe Bazemore and Lee wouldn't have had it either. But Michael Mulder, forget in all the driving layups and threes he made at the end, it isn't going to save.
He's just not as accurate a 3-point shooter as he needs to be.
Yes, and that's what he does, and defensively he just gets roasted. And Bazemore and Lee kind of do some other things. Again, they weren't saving this. I'm not saying they were saving this, but maybe instead of it being, you know, down 40, it would have been, you know, a 15-point game, 20-point game. You know, it's a recognizable NBA loss instead of just this utter devastation.
I agree with that, and I also think that having more bodies matters when they look so gassed, which then makes me wonder, I would get why Steph Curry looks gassed, and he actually, I mean, compared to the other players, played way better, but why are they looking so tired? What's up with that?
Well, Wiggins has played every game, you know. He's played like 250 more minutes than anybody else on the team. I'll give Wiggins, like, he's been there every game. Like, we can go up and down, criticize him and praise him, but
he's always been there every game. Yeah, how is it different than any other year?
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's allowed to feel like he's in the dog days, I would say, for me.
Yeah, I mean, I remember somebody did a study early in the season about the amount of, like, massive blowouts just league-wide, and I think part of it was, like, that whole, like, rubber band theory. Like, when teams get down this season because of everything that has surrounded this season, all the protocols, just the tired nature, the empty, mostly empty arenas, although it's now not fully empty, teams kind of give up. It did seem a little bit like, you know, they had given up as a team, and like they hadn't practiced, and it seemed to have been working for them. You know, they came off that road trip that was a tiring road trip through five different East cities, and they had said, you know what, no practice, no shoot around, let's see how it works. They were good in that Denver game. So Kerr went, okay, no practice after the Denver game, no shoot around. They came out sloppy against Sacramento, but I think because they survived and won the game, he was like, let's just kind of keep this rhythm going of no practice, no shoot around. And I think it eventually caught up to him. Like, not only did they, you know, more than fatigue last night, they just looked like rusty, kind of, you know. It was an energy thing, but it was also just like, and then guess what he did? Immediately, they're practicing as we're speaking right now. They're at 10 a.m. practice right now.
I think there's another element, too, that doesn't make the difference. I don't know. But Dallas was like, okay, this is a playoff game. We're going to ramp up our defense. We're going to overplay. We're going to pressure on the perimeter. And we're going to make them create. We've seen it before in the playoffs. That motion offense, everybody knows it. And these aren't the guys who can counter it. It just can't. And when you start looking at, like, how they decided to attack Dallas, they just went out there running the same sets they always do. I just don't think that's as effective against a playoff-level defense. It's just not as effective. I mean, if you just look at the usage rates, Luka's 46. Like, it's playoff games. You know, Luka's, I mean, he's typically high, but he was even higher than normal. And then you got Steph at 27 for the first half, and, you know, I think he finished at 30. Like, him and Jordan Poole are about the same. Like, at some point, you just got to be like, hey, we can't do this passing on the perimeter and helping teams, like, kind of funnel the ball where they want to go. There's a reason Oubre keeps taking it on his own, because he's got the one-on-one coverage. Like, he's got the opening. I feel like they just say, all right, yeah, we're going to run our offense, and it's just going to work. And, you know, Kevin Durant was even saying that. This stuff, like, it doesn't work like that all the time. Sometimes you got to counter it somehow, and I don't think they were ready to.
Yeah, I can probably recall 25 Steve Kerr quotes talking about when they signed Kevin Durant, how important having him in the playoffs would be. You know, even in during the regular season, it'd be like, you know, like when they need a bucket. And I think they were informed really by that. Remember that Cavalier? I mean, obviously we remember it, but the Cavaliers' second finals that they lost? Yeah, coming out of that, it was like, you know, they just got super physical. Refs weren't calling as many fouls, bumping off ball, and they took them out of a bunch of sets. And I think you're correct. I think when you go into a slump with that kind of offense, I mean, it could get really demoralizing. The way, like, Steph Curry's just scattering around the court for like four straight empty possessions, and he's already in a fatigued state, you know, because of the season. And it just seemed like it was like, oh, the exhaustion.
They need a couple other playmakers, and we've said this for all season. Klay Thompson presumably is one of them, at least a shot maker, but, you know, someone who moves the defense. Wiseman was the one that they were hoping would develop into that. I think there certainly are open questions on that, but he's an option, and then they're going to have to add a player or two, because I think we saw the extent of where this thing could go without another option offensively other than Steph, and putting him in there with two non-shooters, with Draymond and Looney, and potentially a third non-shooter in Kelly Oubre, who shoots. So you have three of those guys on the court with him when Oubre substitutes and he's not starting. But that makes it tricky, you know, and they got away with it for an incredible run there because Steph was playing at, you know, God level, and it isn't going to happen all the time. He might get back into it at some point, but it's really tough. There's a thin line on that one. They need other people. That's why Steph shouldn't have to carry this load, because great teams don't do it like this. They do it in spots. They do it in certain moments. But then they also have Klay, who can go give you game six against the Thunder. You know, you also have Durant. Obviously, you'd always want Durant. But you also, you know, like, you don't just say, okay, our entire game plan is in 36 minutes, Steph, you're going to score 40 points. That's it. it does boil
but
down.
But why is that not the game? That's Dallas's game plan.
Well, how far is Dallas going to go in the playoffs, too, by the way? I mean, you know, we'll see.
But we
we'll
just, see. I mean, like, that's my point. Like, they're not a great team. So no. Why are they playing like they have a great team?
What? I mean, what? So you play pick and roll.
These aren't great.
You play pick and roll with Draymond and make sure that Wiggins gets in the corner. And, you know, I mean, I know what you're saying. I'm just saying it's limited when you don't have the people who can make the shots. It is limited.
Is this somebody's fault? Are they broadly failing Steph Curry, or do we say, hey,
I think part of it is Steph's fault. He's probably tired, but maybe it's Draymond's fault, because somebody at some point has to say, like, I don't know what, they got to say something and be like, all right, Steph, we're done here. Like, this is a 15-0 run or a 13-0 run. Like, this is all you. So everybody get out the way and you take your guy. But instead, they're doing the, okay, we're going to invite the double team. And then he stands out by the hash mark for 15 seconds while other people try to make a play. And you simply just can't do that. You just can't do that. You can't do it for healthy stretches. If Steph doesn't have it, then he goes 4 for 25. And you lose the game. That's going to be a better option than this.
Well, I mean, but there were possessions when he did that. I mean, he was jacking up those quick threes or airballing. You know, they go in and out of it.
He took 6 shots in the first half.
Yeah, they're always going to go. Do it that yeah. Much. Well, when a double team. I mean, a double team at some point. It's
but that's what I'm saying. That's a design. They're like, okay, we're going to – I got Luka on me or whoever on me, somebody who I could probably take. We're gonna bring a screen to get the double team, because the whole point is to try to get those other guys involved. And I'm saying, like, against playoff defenses, that's what they're saying. Hey, let's get the ball in Oubre's hand. Like, let's let him make a play. And they play right into their hands.
It is limited by, like, okay, then Steph goes one-on-one and it doesn't happen. Like, that does happen. Like, he goes one-on-one sometimes, it doesn't work. And then you got 4 guys just standing around, and that's not what they want either. So I think it's just better. You got to get a couple better players. I just don't, and they got to hope Wiseman is somehow blended into this when Clay's out there, because you just don't want to say Steph go score 40. He's going to do it. There are times when he's going to do it, but you just can't say that, because it's impossible in this league. It's just James Harden has come the closest that I think we'll ever see, and look what, you know, that team doesn't get through the playoffs. There's an idea here. It doesn't have to be as pedantic as they are about it. I know about share the ball move, but it also happens to be the best way you can win games, even with Steph at his best. I do believe that. And the answer is they don't have enough personnel to do it like this. You can say Klay Thompson's injury. You can say Jacob Evans' draft pick. You can say whatever you want. Jordan Poole not ready yet. But
Jacob Evans.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you have to say, what's the personnel issue? Because I always joke, like, well, I don't joke. I say it back tartly. Like, what are they supposed to do? Trade for Embiid and Doncic? I mean, those trades aren't there to get a difference maker. They're just,
I mean,
not.
But you don't need to do that to show up against Dallas with the playoffs.
No. It was just, last night was terrible. Last night was horrible.
It feels like Steph has done everything you would want him to do, above and beyond expectations. And the situation appears to be failing him. Now, is that any person in particular's fault? I think that's harder to make that call. There are circumstances involved. It was hard for them to add players given how capped out they were in building up the entire championship run. And then these circumstances, like Klay's injury, which is a weird one, by the way, a very weird one to have kind of a stress injury after being out for such a long period of time. It's just a strange thing, but maybe it's just a situation where there's a little blame spread all the way around. But it does seem like a squandering of Steph Curry, implausibly, improbably getting even better at this stage of his career.
4 max players on the books. 1, they've paid now, what, like $67 million over the last 2 seasons. He's played 0 minutes. Draymond's was a max extension, so it's at a lesser cap number, but technically, like, at the time he signed it, it was the max he could sign. His offense has obviously fallen off a cliff. I mean, he's 4th in the league in assists, and he is doing a lot of passing and playmaking, but we know how Draymond just constricts everyone else offensively because of the way his defender is able to guard him. Curry's obviously one of the 3, and then Andrew Wiggins, who I think we all have agreed is having a solid season, but he's really a $15 million per year.
If we're Monday morning quarterbacking it, I do think if they could do it all over again, they probably make a different call on Draymond. And you can see why they made the call that they did. that might have been a tough decision that they needed to have made the other way to avoid the circumstances.
Yeah, but then
I don't think so.
I think you had to reward him for being so low paid, you know, underpaid for so long. And also, number 30 wants him on the team. And I think that's pretty important.
$20 million is not that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's not a now, in the next 3 years, whatever, but
when Clay's out there. He just
they had to re-sign Draymond, because you don't re-sign Draymond, then what, you know, there's just a ripple effect through the roster, through what players think of you. Ethan is correct intellectually, but I don't think, you know, they could possibly.
I wasn't yelling from the rooftops that they needed to do it, and I get why they made the decision they made. It's just one where, if we're just looking at the circumstance they're in now, because I think we can look at it and go, where they are is not where they want to be. I think we can say that. Now, it's not completely bleak, right? They've got some upside, whatever you think of Wiseman, and 2 first-round picks theoretically come in the next draft, right? There is upside here. You can turn it around. But I think it's fair to look at it and go, they are in a circumstance they did not really want to be in at this juncture. How did they get there? What decisions played into it? And then what decisions do they need to make to get out of it?
And Wiseman, was one way out of it? The picks are another way out of it? And they got to hope that Draymond, you know, can score a couple baskets a game. And we've not seen proof of that.
He had been better lately, but...
Little Haslam mid-range off the pick and roll was interesting.
You love the Haslam mid-range.
I do. I enjoy it. Do you like
maybe
that
they little should, wrinkle? Maybe they should go get Haslam. Go sign. See if Haslam's available.
He is not. The Miami Heat are still paying him to be on the roster.
He's the only guy who's been with his team for longer than Steph's been with the Warriors, by the way. And I keep waiting to say that Steph's the longest, and I keep getting it wrong because Haslam's been longer in Miami.
So what we're talking about is like off-season questions, obviously, and long-term, and they're going to have to face that stark reality when the season ends, and the fact that instead of a full summer of Wiseman, he's like in the early stages of a rehab. Like those are all big issues. But in the now, even coming off that horrendous loss to Dallas, they're still set up in a decent spot to try to sneak their way into the playoffs and then try to scare a Utah or a Phoenix. In the next 10 games, you know, 3 against the Pelicans, 2 against the Thunder. They're about to play the Wolves and Rockets coming up, although yeah, the Wolves are kind of frisky, by the way. I think they're up to the 3rd worst record in the league.
Bumping the percentages out of that number 4 pick for the Warriors, possibly.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
A lot of wins are on the table, and you know, these offensive issues that they have against good teams or playoff level defenses like will pop up if they get into a first round series against Utah or Phoenix, and they clearly, particularly against Utah, should probably run a lot more pick and roll, as Mike Brown once did with Kevin Durant against Rudy Gobert in a Utah Warrior series. But there's still a lot of wins left on the table in the next couple of weeks, and I can't fully report this yet, but it sounds like Kent Bazemore is likely going to be back, which will help for this road trip. So where are you guys at right now on this team?
I think they're a playing team. You know, I mean, you look around, there's not a great bunch of great teams around them either. We can line them up and criticize what the Warriors have done, yet they've still pulled off a bunch of wins lately. They still have one of the best players in the league. They still have, you know, sometimes they play some pretty decent defense. So they're 8-7-8, you know, maybe 9. I think out of this season, that's about what they should be. And they shouldn't be worse than that. And they should get in there and, you know, and then don't lay an egg there. If you lose, lose with some effort and some force. But I think a 500 team should be 8-9, and that's where they are. And then get themselves into this, into the mix, see where they can go. I don't think any of us foresee a long run, but get in there, maybe make a little bit of noise.
Is it too much to ask for Adam Silver to just tilt things in the Warriors' direction to help with these whole TV ratings? I mean, I'm looking at the numbers. I'm just saying. David Stern might. I'm just saying. It's quite the blow to the league if there's not at least one playoff series involving the Golden State Warriors. There were 12 games on cable last week, NBA games. The two most watched were the two Steph played in. So, yeah, it's...
You got all the clout. You just make it happen. I'll just make it happen.
I'll contact my old employees.
I'm more curious what the tilt would look like. What kind of tilt do you have in mind?
Calling the off-ball fouls.
Yeah, he's going to say officiating. The officiating. No,
I mean, that was... I mean, if we're totally honest about it, David Stern, RIP, that was an influence Stern had over teams and players and coaches and keeping them in line, is that the league would share points of emphasis with these refs, and that point of emphasis could help you or hurt you. And there was never any, we need to screw this team or screw that team, or any hard evidence of it. But I think people knew that, hey, your player's favorite move might be the point of emphasis in this playoff series. So yeah, a point of emphasis on off ball grabbing would do the Warriors so nice in the play-in tournament.
Ethan, throwing out those conspiracy theories, throwing them out there. Go ahead.
There you go, Ethan.
I'm just believing incentives. I believe in incentives. That's all. That's all I believe in.
You think they might have said something to the officials for Game 6 before the Kings-Lakers series? I don't know.
Ralph Nader and me have talked about it a lot.
This has become a conspiracy theory podcast.
Which Oubre are we evaluating on, by the way? Is it...
No, Luch Oubre.
Because there was a couple games there where Oubre was like, it was, you know, he's looking great. It's like, uh-huh.
I like Bench Oubre. I don't dislike Bench Oubre. I don't know about over 30 minutes in a game, Oubre. And it's fair to say you got your up games, you got your down games. I'm not blaming him for the last game. He had a few good ones. That was my ultimate Oubre takeaway was, yeah, a little bit of a smaller dose of Oubre might not be worth the
selective
Warriors' pocketbook.
Dose.
Yeah, selective dose.
Like, if you're an executive, and I know we've seen his estimates, and I know he has value and he's young, if you watch this season, are you really going to give him $18 million a year, though? Really? I mean, I know there's money to be spent, and we know that they have to spend it for their cap room and all, but is that the guy you're really going to give $18 million a year? Because I don't think he's an $18 million a year player. I just don't see it.
I know what you're saying, but like Phoenix gave him $14 million a year like two off seasons ago, and he was worse then.
But he was 22, you know, and you could project.
He's better now. I mean, he's had two better seasons.
But he's got a ceiling. There's no question Kelly Oubre's got a ceiling. And maybe you couldn't see it back then. I didn't see it. I thought he was going to be a better player with the Warriors right this season than he's been. I just didn't think he was going to fire up those crazy threes like he does. And he makes them, I know, occasionally, but he puts up way too many of them. He shoots them like he's Steph, and he's not Steph. And the defense is on the ball is good. I think off the ball is not so good. And the plus-minus numbers are just horrendous with him. They're just terrible. So, I mean, he's a mini Wiseman, you know, dragging down that lineup when he's in there. I don't know that I think he's a $9 million, $10 million player. I really don't. You know, this will get excerpted and I'll get yelled at on Twitter, but I just don't think he's an $18
million. No, I think there are a lot of people that would have that opinion. I think there are a lot of front offices that are like, we're just not adding him. He's a $0 million.
There are far more Warriors fans who are frustrated with Oubre than there are Warriors fans who are backing Oubre.
I feel like it's just a few people, but that's like off the bench. I mean, if you look at the people who are making $18 million now, Tim Hardaway Jr., Julius Randle, Terry Rozier, Aaron Gordon, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Goran Dragic, Miles Turner.
It's all the guys we talked about potentially trading for him. Yep. And you know what? That is the kind of tier he's in.
I understand that it's the parameters. I would not pay it. I'm just saying, if you're an NBA executive, can you see doing that? I would say, no, you know what? I can go get somebody for $4 million who's going to do 60% of that.
the problem has always been, you know, maybe you can get a trade exception. That might be the proper way to go. But in general, like, you can't replace him.
I guess I'm saying this, like, are the Warriors going to have to, like, they might only have to pay him 12. And for 12 and 13, he's a lot better for them than he is at 18.
Is it too touchy-feely, sharing is caring, Hoosiers, to just say he plays too selfish for the sort of culture they're trying to instill? Like, he does for the starting lineup,
and I think that's what they've decided.
I think the harder conversation with him isn't like, hey, you know, what's your monetary value? Because you're right, the market might correct, or you know, you never know how anybody's market's going to go, especially kind of a high variance player like him. But I think the harder conversation with him is like, you know, not only just would he probably have to come back at a lower dollar amount than he prefers on the market, but also you'd have to say, like, he should really only be on the team if he's a bench player. That has been made clear this past week with the fact that even when Bazemore's out, he's literally starting Michael Mulder over him. Like, there's no way they can go to the summer and be like, yeah, Kelly, and that was a late season thing. You're going to come back and, you know, 35 minutes a night. I know Klay Thompson's come back. Like, he knows if he's coming back, like, there might be games where he's getting, you know, 15 minutes. And that, I just don't think he's ready to accept. We'll see. I just don't think so. That's certainly not what he signaled.
I just think you have to be able to pass the ball a lot better if you're going to shoot that inefficiently. I mean, to shoot inefficiently and never pass as a perimeter player, it's not going to outweigh what he's doing on defense. It's just not great. I'm more inclined to try to figure it out with other guys. And I'm not trying to salvage Joe Lacob's money. I just think in terms of the culture, in terms of what some of these other guys have shown that you can get for not as much, in terms of how he doesn't seem to want the role they would need him to play, I just don't see how he fits, especially when Klay comes back. And Klay's not exactly a ball mover. I just don't see the fit long term.
MT, you raised the question. What's your answer?
He would absolutely have to accept the role they want him. And I'm kind of with you, TK. I mean, is when he goes into free agency, right, and he's on the market, what's he getting? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, he's been saying he wants to be home, right? He wants to find a place to settle, to like put roots. Is he getting a four-year, $72 million deal? Four-year, $80 million deal? If he's getting that, he's out, right? That, like, he's got to take that because probably the only time he's going to get it. So it would have to be the market, which has happened before. You know, Looney's here because of that, right? Like, the market just doesn't, you know, produce the harvest that they think, and you end up taking the role. He would have to fit in that role, I think.
The problem with, like, the Looney comparison is, like, Looney, you're right, we thought he was going to have a bigger market. He didn't. So he said, you know what? I love my role with the Warriors. They love how I play my role. I'm going to come back. It's a home. With Oubre, the problem isn't just like, hey, what if the market says, well, you know, they're only offering me mid-level exception. They're only offering me $12 million a year. But I have three offers of that. Two of them are saying I'm going to start and play 30 guaranteed minutes and I can basically, you know, get up shots like I want. And the Warriors are saying, no, you're coming back to a bench role. Like, that is probably the bigger, you know, conflicting point.
Does he want to win?
Yeah, it might be a winner that wants to sign him. You know, who knows? But I agree. I think all these things are in play. But yeah, the idea of the Warriors getting in a hot market for Kelly Oubre, I think is this season would argue strongly against that. And I've thrown Bazemore out there too many times that I shouldn't do it again. But I just think if you re-sign Bazemore for three, you get a strong enough percentage value difference that you might as well just do that. And again, it's not about saving Lacob's money, other than there's got to be some level where they're not going to go to on this payroll. There's some tax money that they're not going to hit, especially after a season where they're not, you know, they didn't have fans for most of the season.
They limited it this year a little bit, you know, with the fact that they didn't use the DPE. It was clearly like, look, this isn't a title team. There's no, you know, use in going and spending another $25 million to get Nemanja Bjelica on the team, essentially. And right now, I mean, it sounds like Gary Payton II's not necessarily coming back, and they'll probably leave a couple open roster spots for the next couple of weeks. I mean, at the end of the day, that's mostly just about saving tax money.
Yeah, I mean, once you're in the tax, I'm not going to rip you for trying to save some of the tax. Like, they're in the tax. Like, they're paying crazy money.
They're heavy in the tax.
Yeah. So I'm never going to criticize a team that far in the tax for not going more in the tax. So just within that parameter.
Especially not when you get smacked by 30 with in a playoff type of game. Like, attacks for that.
Yes. So, you know, if they say Bazemore plus Damian Lee equals enough, close enough, plus a draft pick is enough to balance out, decide to play Kelly Oubre, $18 million. I don't have a problem with that.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I especially am not going to kill him for it when, what's the NBA's financial situation? I mean, that's a big open question that...
Yeah, I mean, you mean like for the free agent market? Because I think the Warriors have decided that their market is different than the NBA market, right? The Warriors have said, we're fine. They're clearly operating because of it.
The Warriors' financial situation is interesting just in how they sold off a piece of their team and the valuation corresponds to them being worth $5.5 billion. So I guess they could just get some liquidity. If they ever need to get some liquidity, maybe they just sell off a piece of it, I suppose. I mean, that's insane when you think about it. That story came and went, but they bought the team for, was it $450 million? So it has gone from a $450 million... which was a record, $450 million purchase, a decade later, now worth $5.5 billion. Pretty good turnaround, especially considering that they can't even really get too many fans in the building. Have they, Slater, have they raised the cap on how many fans? I mean, what do you...
I believe it was 3,600. It went from basically like 1,900 the first game to around 3 the second home game, and then I think 36 last night with the upper deck open.
I mean, I was there for the first night. Slater, you were there for both. Can you feel the fans? Can you
sense? I didn't even go last night.
Okay. Oh, my God. Oh, revelation.
I know. I pulled the plug. I was like, you know what? They're probably going to get
Hey, cream. That's an excellent call, Slater.
I saw some fans tweeting about it, but they were expressing frustration in the way that we weren't expressing frustration. We understood, but not being able to eat or drink.
You know, I was drinking water at my seat there in the first game, the media seat, and we were told we couldn't do that. No, I mean, and I'm not sitting here to like complain about that. I'm just saying I know that what you're saying is right.
Tea and everything.
But like particularly the fans are being told, no, you can't. You go to concession stands, you're eating out
I brought there. A hot soup and I was breathing on it to try to cool it down. I was just blowing on it. I was being reckless. Now, I think a lot of fans want to see the Warriors, the novelty, they miss it. But when you arrive in the building and you can't eat or drink when watching a sports game, that's something that I just wonder if word spreads around in these. It's just something that cannot be next season, I guess, is what I'm saying, in order for the NBA
and
to get
it
fans
won't
back.
Be. It won't be. But I mean, you know, eventually stuff will loosen. I know they're in no way part of, you know, similar to different parts of the country, but like, you know, Atlanta, I just saw announced like Braves game starting next week, 100% capacity. Like stuff is blowing open over the next few months, it seems like. So,
well, certainly outside.
Ethan, you just want to get back in that bunker. Bunker
That's
suites.
What I want. That's what I want. Get me back in the bunker.
I bet you they're eating in the bunker suites. Come on,
I think
man.
Oh, yeah. Probably happened this whole time. No, I don't know. We don't know that.
That was the last. I mean, the last time I was in the building, Tim, we were in the bunker suite, I think. Maybe not the last time, but
that was close to it. Yeah, that was close to it. Yeah, that's right.
Isn't that crazy? We were sampling all the delicious food that they were
going to
serve.
All the food
everybody.
Laid out on a table, and we were picking amongst it, sampling it. Can you imagine doing that ever again? Ever again? February 2020. Unbelievable.
So this is where I kind of see this going. Have you seen the Spurs schedule the rest of the season? At Miami, at Boston, against the Sixers, at Utah again, at Portland. at Brooklyn, at New York, two home games against Phoenix, a home game against the Bucks. They're going to lose a lot of games.
Do they have the tiebreaker? Who's got the tiebreaker with the Warriors?
They're going to win.
The Warriors have the tiebreaker too.
They're going to win more than we think. This team, they keep doing this.
I would just say this: it's extremely likely that the Spurs are the 10, which puts the Warriors at the 9, and meaning they need to hop either Memphis or Portland, who are a few games ahead of them. Portland has been in a free fall, and they're on the start of a really tough road trip. They actually won the first game after losing 5 straight. They beat the Pacers, but they have a bunch of tough games coming up on the road. So there are losses ahead for them, and they have the 29th ranked defense. It's just not that good of a situation. So they're possible to catch, but if you talk to Warriors people, they think the worst loss of the season was that one right before the All-Star break where they blew it in Portland. They lost the tiebreaker that night. They obviously lost a game that they should have won, and that might hold them below Portland, because even if they get up and tie Portland, they lose the tiebreaker. So Memphis is the team to look at, I think. Memphis is 2 games above 500, so 1 game ahead of the Warriors as of us talking. Jaren Jackson is back. Looked good in a game against Portland. Memphis actually just went into Portland and swept 2 straight. Jaren Jackson went 10 of 14 shooting in one of the games.
By the way, Jaren Jackson is now my comp for Wiseman. That's where Wiseman needs to get, to Jaren Jackson.
Memphis is in Chase Center the last game of the regular season. Tiebreaker is on the line because it's 1-1. So to me, that seems to be where it's headed. They might be playing for the upper side of the play-in on the last game of the regular season. We'll see. But that's kind of what I'm thinking.
And we know how they turn up for those big games this season. I mean, I see that. I mean, they're again, these are not great teams they're in the middle of. There's a reason why they're all in this group here. Is not because they've had great seasons, it's because they've had mediocre seasons, and the Warriors should win enough. 8 should be doable. They might not get there, but it should be doable to get themselves in that upper tier, so you get 2 shots at it. But it might be 9. I would not be shocked if they struggle around, bounce around, and they get to 9 and they have 1 shot at it.
9 gets them a home game.
Yeah, at least gets them a home game. And I think that should be the goal. I've said that. And I don't think they think that's the goal, but I think that's just get a home playoff home game, see what Chase Center's like in the postseason.
That's where the Spurs actually help. That's why the Spurs schedule helps them, because them not being 10 guarantees them some type of home game. Because even if they go up to 8 and play a road game, if they lose it, they get a home game. So
that's it. I've declared it. Get, in some way, somehow, get a home game in the playoffs, and they can declare some of the season somewhat of a success. How's that for qualifiers? And I think it's doable. I think it's very doable. I think it would be a disappointment for them if they didn't, in some way, get in a position to get a home
game. If they get caught by the Pelicans, son.
Yeah, that would be bad. Yeah, that would be bad. Or they just, you know, they just free fall. They would lose some more games that they should win, and they get caught by everybody. It would be a bad thing. But there's enough there. And again, we're doing this off of a blowout. If we did this off the previous game, even though it was sort of a shaky win over Sacramento, we'd be saying a different thing. I mean, it all hinges on what we've just seen, and what we just saw was crap. But it's very likely they could play 2 very good games after this. So get that home game.
I still think 6 is in play. I don't know what Slater's talking about. 6 is in play.
We believe in 6. We believe in 6.
I want you to lay out
10-0.
Oh, I'm going to rack up the subscribers.
6 seed banner goes up if they get the 6 seed. They put that right up next to the Kevin Durant retirement
banner. Yeah, I'm going to rack up the subs right now. I'm writing the pathway.
They retired 30, 35, 9, 23, and 6.
Put them all up there. 6 gets there. 6 gets them there.
I'm writing a pathway to 6, how they're going to win every one of these games, run the table.
I'll tell you what, that isn't a pathway to subs. This next topic, I'm sorry to hijack the show, Marcus, is a subs-worthy topic. Are the 49ers about to save the Warriors and draft Max?
Oh, I like this. I like this. This is funny.
Well, yeah, they're about to lose me. Yeah, that's for sure. This is gonna be amazing. Tomorrow's going to be amazing. Last few days have been amazing. I know, as Ethan has commented, Warriors officials are fascinated by what the 49ers are about to do. I don't want to completely change this, but it's funny. Like, people are saying, oh, it'll just be ridiculous tomorrow, and then it'll be over. Are you kidding me? Once they make this pick, if it's Mac Jones, the repercussions of this pick are going to be like every day, 10 times a day.
Yeah, we never discussed the Wiseman pick. We didn't discuss it at all.
Exactly. It's like, it's just going to be, okay, who was against it?
To the point where if I'm Mac Jones, I'm like, don't pick me. Like,
yes.
I don't want that.
I think that might be the one thing that stops Shanahan from doing it. Isn't that he thinks there's any question that Jones is the best pick. It's that if you pick him, everybody is going to be looking for him to fail. Every single person on earth is going to be looking for reasons to fail. And do you want to put that on your guy? I think Shanahan does want to do it, is going to do it, but that would be the one moment of hesitation I think he would have. I still think they're taking Mac Jones because he's never had his guy. He's going to feel that Mac Jones is good enough to hold up to it. But the tidal wave is going to hit like nothing I've ever felt, I've ever experienced in Bay Area sports, ever. This is the biggest thing, you know, amount of fan anger and angst that I've ever felt. No question. It's not even close.
Wow. So I don't know anything about anything. I'm the most casual football fans, but it's weird to watch from the outside because I buy the conventional wisdom that Fields is way better. And at Alabama, you've got all this talent around you. So that explains some of the productivity. But it is weird to see just such revulsion at the thought of drafting a guy who had a 77% completion percentage in college. I mean, just from the outside looking in as somebody who doesn't know anything, it's very strange to see how passionate and fired up fans are ahead of the draft of knowing that they know and Shanahan doesn't know anything and is a total idiot about
Shanahan,
this.
Well, I was to say this, Shanahan, and I've given a pass for this, but he also passed up on Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson.
Because
he had Kirk Cousins.
And moved up to get C.J. Beathard.
And moved up to get C.J. Beathard. And, you know, there's a pattern.
Beathard had a few good backup.
Oh, no, you hear this?
Okay.
Rock in the hair, you know? He had some good moments.
Replacing Nick Mullins, another turd.
It's just the anticipation. As I said, the fans aren't mad that people say it's going to be Mac Jones. Fans are mad deep down inside because they know this is something that Kyle Shanahan would do.
Well, and also, this is a lot about the asset play, too, right? To move up for
three number ones.
I think that's it.
12. I mean, not from like 30. It's from 12. So you had a very valuable asset at 12. You kicked that in with two other future number ones.
My Miami Dolphins thank the Niners for that.
The Dolphins came off of this like incredibly. It is the encapsulation of what people think about Kyle Shanahan. Like, he's this mad genius I compare him to Don Nelson a little bit. Like you don't want to coach against this guy. You absolutely do not want to coach against this guy. But maybe he's so intent on outsmarting you that he tricks himself on the personnel side in the most important position on the field, which is quarterback. And you guys are getting a little preview of a column that might be coming. Like, he's so intent. And like, even if there was some question about in his mind about Mac Jones, once the criticism hit about Mac Jones, what's he going to do? It's not going to run away from it. It's going to be, I'm right. I'm right. This is my guy. Of course I'm right. It's not going to be the other way. If he gets persuaded off of Mac Jones.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, if he gets persuaded from Mac Jones by John Lynch, that is going to be an incredible story to tell. That, if that's what's happening right now, I don't think it's going to happen. But if it does happen, what a freaking story. And that will have repercussions because then Kyle Shanahan will not have drafted his guy. So how is he going to deal with that?
He's going to be dogging Trey Lance his whole rookie year.
Exactly.
Huh?
There was Robert Griffin III. Weren't he and his dad's guy? Their guy was Kirk Cousins. You know, that will be the tip. There you go. There's another thing I could write. If they take Trey Lance with the third pick and then take some other standstill quarterback in the fourth round, that will be your tip that Kyle Shanahan did not want to draft Trey Lance, which we know anyway. It's just a fascinating of so many different things about how to run a franchise, how to set up a roster, how to utilize draft choices, how to evaluate important positions that are universal, that are all focusing in on this one move. And the 49ers coach is not happy with the way I've portrayed it, too. So that's all fun, too.
Yeah, the draft value thing is big to me. That's just huge.
It's how you manage assets.
Once again, my Miami Dolphins, thank you. But at the same time,
49ers plus minus.
Following fringe draft coverage, both the Alabama receivers coming out, Waddle and Devontae Smith, this is not good for the Dolphins, apparently said, one on an interview on NFL Network, the other in a team interview, were asked like Tua or Mac Jones because they played with both, and both of them were like Mac Jones, like said it very pretty transparently. So, I mean, that's probably a good sign for Mac Jones. It's certainly not a good sign for Tua. But I kind of wanted to flip it back to my original question. Like, is it good for the Warriors if the Niners invite this firestorm? Is it good for just like the, you know, because like we've just talked all season about just like the swirling angst about the Warriors. You know, in some ways it's like, well, you want your fan base like furiously talking about you and always like interested in everything you're doing, but does this help?
Teams root for failure of the other teams in their city, which is funny because it's never thought of that way. And in theory, it's all the same fans, but generally that has been my impression that they never come out and say it. The Warriors have an unusual relationship with the 49ers that is very cordial. They consulted with one another when it came to building a new arena. But generally, you want all the other sports teams in your region to fail to make you look better by comparison. Those are the incentives.
The controversy part of it would be probably decent for the Warriors, but they'll, you know, their fans are still going to be angry, you know, for burning a year of Steph's prime, all those things that have come up over and over again. Steve Kerr, the offensive system isn't right. What do they do with Wiseman? But it will be toned down without question on the talk radio or whatever. We're spending time on Warriors Plus Minus talking about the 49ers, right? After a 107 point loss. But it will still be in that context. It will still be ripped by the people who support them. But yes, the eye of the Bay Area and the eye of the nation, instead of, you know, on First Take, are they discussing Steph Curry's legacy or are they discussing what is Kyle Shanahan doing? They're discussing what Kyle Shanahan is doing. That has become the great debate point probably of this decade in Bay Area sports. I don't think there's going to be a bigger one. And so that does take a little bit off. But what if the Warriors play great? And then that takes a little bit of a, you know, spotlight off of that. So
KD's there go is pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah, KD's
there
go
was pretty big.
Yeah, that was pretty big. That wasn't three number ones in the entire future of the organization. But you're right. There are comparables. I'm not saying there are no comparables. I'm just saying in terms of the decision making and the process, that wasn't KD stay or go wasn't like what are the Warriors doing? Like the Warriors are trying to re-sign Kevin Durant. This is the 49ers investing their entire future, possibly on a quarterback who would be the most unathletic quarterback taken in the top three in the last 30 years. I don't think there's a question about that.
And also might have been there at 12, which might, is...
Probably wouldn't be, but I think that's his fair draft value, just quarterbacks get pumped up. But you want to know why 49ers fans are mad about this. It's James Wiseman. I just talked about this with a Warriors person, so it's fresh in my mind. He's the exact opposite of Wiseman. Wiseman is all talent. He's all possibility. You can't say something that he can't do, theoretically. It jumps off the page. He's young. You don't know where he's going to go. It's the possibilities are endless. It might not happen, but you see it. Mac Jones is entirely set to be one thing and one thing only, and that's if he maxes. He maxes of what he is. If there is a stumble, if there is an injury, if there is any problem in his rookie season, he probably will not be that good. That's the problem. There is a set, fixed, finite sense of what Mac Jones can possibly be. And there is the exact opposite of what James Wiseman is. There are issues with the Wiseman pick. There are issues with Wiseman. But you can't say it isn't that there is a, you know, there is an unforeseen limit to what he can do. Yeah. With Mac Jones, there is not this unlimited upside. There is strictly he's Drew Brees. Well, Drew Brees wasn't Drew Brees for like 6 years. And I honestly don't believe you ever take a guy to be... He's this limited athletic guy who's maximized everything by more than anyone could ever say. You take the talented player and you hope he has these other things at the top of the draft when you trade three number ones. That's the issue. And that's why it's different than Durant. It's why it's different than anything the Giants have done. It's just, it's bigger than anything because of the buildup, the thought process, the draft capital expended, and the quarterback position in this league. That's why this is the biggest thing ever. Wow, you got me on a monologue on non-Warriors.
And that'll be a wrap for 49ers plus minus.
That's good. Anybody disagree? Ethan, you disagree?
I don't, but I just stopped recording my end of this. I thought we were done.
I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the overlap with the Wiseman pick. I do think the next half decade in Bay Area sports will be debating these picks, like the Wiseman
and Mac Jones, baby.
And the Mac, if it is,
or
Mac
whoever
Jones.
It is, no yeah. matter who it is, yeah, even if it's Fields or Trey Lance.
That's why the draft is important. I mean, it's always important, but when you have a top three pick or when you maneuver into it, that's it. It's the whole thing. If the Minnesota Timberwolves take Steph Curry, what's their future like from that point on? It's incredibly different. These things matter. That's why we talk about them.
All right. Until next week, we are out of here.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.